Welcome, folks, to the May 11th Aries Working Group call. We have some cool topics on the schedule today. This is hyperledger meeting, so the antitrust policy and the hyperledger code of conduct are in effect. The agenda can be newly found in the chat. You're welcome to make any adjustments that you'd like, including adding yourself to the attendees list. Anyone new today that would like to introduce themselves?
Good morning, afternoon, everyone.
Go ahead, Victor.
Go ahead, Clement. we wanted to say we are here with Clement and myself, Victor. We are working for SIGPA, and I hope we can have 5-10 minutes time so we can present our plugins that we wanted to contribute to Hyperledger.
Yes, I'm planning on giving you a little bit more time than that if you would like it. So we do have time today. Glad to have you both here. Anybody else?
I am here. I'm a new contributor to Aries. Mostly been working on framework JavaScript, so coming to learn some more about the project and see what this is all about.
Welcome, Colby. Anybody else? All the new people on the same day. This is perfect. Totally, to be fair, not totally new for some, but glad to have you anyway. All right. I don't have any announcements on my announcements list. Should I have something on there that isn't? All right. Any projects want to share release status or work updates?
For Aries Framework JavaScript, we merged issue credential v2 support. Still working on some interoperability issues with EchoPy, for example, but it has been merged now. So and working on adding tests in Aries agent test harness to make sure we didn't break anything.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Great work.
All right. We know there's lots going on and lots of work. Appreciate everyone's efforts. We have two topics on the list today, and we probably have room for a little bit more if there's stuff that people would like to bring up or talk about or issues they'd like to surface. First we'll hear from Steven about load test generator results. And then, as Victor mentioned, there's a number of repositories that SIGPA is interested in contributing to the community. And so we will have a review and a discussion of those repositories. Anything else on the agenda that we should change or add or modify before we get going?
Maybe in the end, if there's time left, we can do a quick go over the issue I made on migrating to fully qualified bits and some issues I've encountered with. I've been trying to start working on a bit in Aries Framework JavaScript to see what's possible. And I think there's a few limitations that would be good to discuss.
That's excellent. This has been an ongoing conversation for those not here the last couple of weeks. And that would be excellent to have a continuation of this. So that's perfect, Timo, we'll have that. Any others? All right, Stephen, why don't I turn this over to you? Do you want me to share or do you want to share?
No, I can do it. I just wanted to highlight a few things. There we go. Oops. Oh, I see what I'm doing. Okay. So one of my roles is to do the Aries quarterly report and the Indy quarterly report, which was due and completed last week. These are done for the Hyperledger Technical Steering Committee. And one of the things that I highlighted in there was some work being done around performance load testing and things like that. So that's one of the accomplishments this quarter. And I wanted to put in some evidence of exactly what have been accomplished. And I realized when I looked at the links that I found, sort of a set of really, really cool things that have been done in the community that I wanted to highlight and that I thought it would be worth mentioning at meetings like this. So it's a combination of efforts. So one is this Aries Cloud Agent Generator that was created by some folks at in Germany at LISI and ID Union and IBM. And what this is a method of running Aries Cloud Agent Python in a controlled environment to load to performance test it. So basically a scripting setup, Docker Compose running on a VM where you can control all sorts of parameters relating to the test. How much load are you putting on it? How many clients are you putting on it? Which are you using revocation? What ledger are you using? So you've got a whole set of parameters and you can run tests. And this came in at the perfect time. So one is it allowed us to sort of get an idea of where we were with performance. But a second one was a number of issues were reported early in the quarter this year, early in the new year, that showed that under load conditions, bad things would happen. And it wasn't clear where these errors were coming from and they weren't easy to reproduce. And so the second thing that happened was that Paul, who created this load generator, was able to use this to replicate the events and then add debugging capabilities into this environment so that he could turn that over to so the developers on Akapai, including Andrew Whitehead, and Andrew could then recreate the problem and with the debugging capability, sort of figure out what was going on under these extreme conditions. So second big thing. So first we have this test environment to do. Next, we have a way to use that to reproduce really difficult to create problems and really difficult to fix. And we got those fixed and we wound up with the problems being identified that were happening like 2% of the time under load, readily reproduced and then corrections made and able to prove that they were corrected so that we could run the old code, run the new code under the same conditions and show that it was corrected. That's the second thing. Then the third thing that I wanted to highlight was just the stability and the difference between Akapai running with the Indie SDK versus running with Aries Askar, which is the shared components, the replacements that have been in work for basically a year and a half, 2 years, to replace the Indie SDK. And what we realized in looking at this, this is the summary of the Indie SDK, a load test, and then I'll show you the Askar one. And the important thing to see is this, which is, this is the transaction rate of the of Akapai running. So the test was to try to accomplish 200 transactions per minute through this. And what you see is it runs for a while with 200 transactions per minute, and then performance kind of drops off and varies, but tends downwards and is, you know, a quarter or less of what we wanted, which is the 200. So that's under the Indie SDK. We also have, you know, a fairly high rate of error, 2,500 out of 18,000 iterations. That's an awful lot of error. When we ran the same test, same parameters with Askar in it, so basically changing a single parameter, which of course underneath changes a whole lot of stuff. So you're now running with Indie VDR as the connection to the Indie ledger, running with CredX implementation of a non-creds, which again, both of those things, all three of these, and then you're running Askar, which is the persistent storage and key management component. All of those are evolutions of the NDSDK, separating them into separate packages, and then adjusting them. So for example, there's not a central queue and things like that. But what you see here is we're trying to achieve 200 transactions per minute, and we achieve that continuously throughout the entire, in this case, 6-hour test. We had a total of 24 errors over that time, 68,000 iterations. So what you're seeing there is the third item I wanted to highlight, which is that Askar and the components, the shared components, are really getting extremely stable. And it's now to the point that it really looks worth a more aggressive transition from the use of NDSDK underneath the Aries frameworks, and replacing that with Askar and the shared components. So those are the three things I wanted to highlight. I believe this will be transferred. This Aries Cloud Agent load generator will be transferred. I'm hoping to spend a bit of time with it and get it set up in my own world so I can use it regularly. Right now, I send Discord messages, "Hey, Paul, could you run this test for me?" But I really want to get this so that we become one with it and make use of it and try out different scenarios and see how easy it is to use out different scenarios. But this is an invaluable tool. As I mentioned, with the new version of Akamai, we're going to recommend that people use Askar as the default, especially for new projects, and move away from NDSDK at this time for those projects. There is not a migration script yet to move an existing implementation from Askar or from NDSDK over to Askar and the shared components, but we plan on working towards that. So that's what I wanted to share. I see a couple of questions. The load testing, a load test transaction in this case is a issue and a receive. So both the issuer and the holder are running as multi-container image instances. So both are spinning up multiple instances of Akamai. The issuer is, and the holder is, and you're and then there's a driver that is pushing as many transactions through the issuer as possible, which correspondingly causes the holder to collect as many credentials as it can. So that's what a transaction is in this case. So pretty nice stuff. This is the output of the load test generator. Lots of really good information. You can see things like HTTP response times and requests. The one I wanted to highlight a little lower down is sort of showing connections here. Was that? Sorry, I'm not sure on that one. But CPU usage, things like that are showing. So these are all of the agents, issuer agents and holder agents get monitored, and we sort of see how much load it's putting on the system and so on. Yeah, the last thing Timo mentions is the improvements. The Askar, the cleanup, relatively small number of fixes and things, but the cleanup was incredible. Evidently, there was an 11% performance increase, and all of these load errors were corrected in that time. So very cool stuff.
Stephen, question. Is this using Akamai to generate the load?
Using a controller. Yes, I mean, it's Akamai agents, and then there's a controller script that is basically generating the load itself.
Okay, so this is a controller on top of Akamai to make that actually happen.
Yes.
So presumably, you could actually use Akamai as the load test generator, but with that controller, but a different Aries agent.
that would be awesome, would be to be able to swap out. I mean, basically it's Docker Compose and the agent running is that. So the controller script is probably, I assume it's probably a bash script sending, you know, requests to the API. So what, you know, just like we do with the Aries agent test harness, we probably could swap out, provide a generic API and wrap the instance in.
I think I quickly took a look at this because I was also interested in it for Aries framework JavaScript, and they have it's written in Java, I believe, and they just have like a Java interface you would have to implement for your agent. And I think they wrapped it for ECPI, but you could also make REST calls to another agent if you would like by implementing that interface.
Very cool.
Yep.
Steven, thank you for reporting on that. And I that recommendation to switch to Asgard has been, I know folks in the community, I know we in DCO are already, have been testing that, but are expected to accelerate our efforts to switch over Asgard as the underlying library. So very cool. Any other comments, questions for Steven? Awesome. Victor, you or Clement are up?
No, I just wanted to say also that maybe another thing also take into account with Asgard is that it's async is non-blocking, meaning in a high availability scenario where you can have multiple ACA pythons, I think here the performance improvement can be even bigger. We haven't tested, but I would be curious to know if someone has tested this feature as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the core things that we did just under the covers. And I don't know too deep a detail on this, but basically with with Indy, there's sort of a common queue for all features across all of the components of Indy. And so that leads to a sort of centralized processing of that queue. Once the item on the queue gets passed off into different threads, but it is still a central queue, and some tasks take longer than others, which blocks that queue. The idea originally was to keep them all as short as possible. So that's one of the things Andrew did, was to separate all everything into separate queues and things like that. So the separate components each have their own queue, and a lot of work was put into only having blocking where the blocking was necessary. So trying to prevent scenarios where, just to be safe, things were blocked as opposed to because they were necessary. And I think that's where a lot of that performance is coming from. But over to you, Victor, for new repos. I think we're on the next topic.
Okay. So let me share my screen here quickly. So, in a nutshell, what we wanted is to, we already open source three plugins that are used for along with ACA Python. One is, the two first plugins are connecting the universal resolver or adding, let's say, remote resolution to ACA Python. And we have implemented two plugins, one adding an HTTP interface to connect to the universal resolver, and the other one is a via DITCOM protocol. So you can connect from ACA Python to the universal resolver via DITCOM protocol. This is the one that I wanted to present now, and the other one, my colleague Clement is gonna present. It's a plugin to add Kafka queues in ACA Python. By default, ACA Python right now, the queues are in memory by default, but now the idea is we wanted to add persistence and reliability, adding persistent queues. So now there is the possibility to add a Kafka plugin to that works along with ACA Python. And all these three plugins are already open source, and you can find it under our repo. But the idea is, we thought that would be maybe interesting to donate these plugins to Hyperledger. So first, contextually, they are sitting near to Akka Python, and maybe it's easy for people if they want to use it. And also later to have better visibility and maybe welcome other contributions. So let me quickly explain the, let's say, universal resolution plugin. The idea is, actually, Akka Python has a quite sophisticated resolution for W3C credentials. In Akka Python, you can create, based on this diagram that you see here, native resolvers. Native resolvers means the DID resolvers that are implemented in Python within Akka Python. But also, let's say, if we want to leverage other projects like the universal resolver, the idea here is when the plugin comes into place, you can use the two plugins to connect automatically to the universal resolver and do DID resolution using the universal resolver. And as I mentioned before, there are two type of there are two plugins. One's adding a HTTP interface, and the other one using the DID resolution RFC in Aries over DITCOM. The idea behind the DITCOM protocol is, as we know, I mean, if you deployed your Akka Python or your agency within the same infrastructure, maybe it's fine for you to also deploy the universal resolver as part of your infrastructure, and maybe you don't have any trust issues. So for this, maybe it's nice to have an HTTP. It's completely enough to have an HTTP interface. But let's say in the case, like, I don't know, you want to the universal resolver is deployed elsewhere or not under your not or under your DMZ. The idea is to add a DITCOM interface, so to enhance the trust, because as we know, you know, resolving DITs is something very important. So yeah, this is why we decided to implement this DITCOM protocol. And that's it. This is the two plugins that we wanted to contribute to Hyperledger. I don't know if you have any comments. Otherwise, maybe my colleague Clement can explain you more about the Kafka plugin.
If I could just jump in for a bit of context on this section, what we're looking at, members and people, anyone really, is invited to contribute repos to Hyperledger as appropriate. And so one of the things I wanted to make sure what in asking Victor and Clement to present is to ensure that they had community support for that contribution. So that's part of what we're looking for here, is not just to let you know these exist, but also for your opinions, if any, on these being contributed to Hyperledger and being added to the Hyperledger family of repos and capabilities within Aries. So just keep that in mind as you listen to this. At the end, we'll basically say any objections. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Clement.
No, hang on, Victor. I've got a question on the last one. What's the structure of this? You've added the universal resolver. There's an agent presumably running there. Is that AkkaPy or is that a different agent software?
Yeah, let me share again my screen. So let's see. The idea behind is, if you see here the architecture, we have AkkaPython running. So this plugin, what it does is really add this blue box here to add an HTTP remote client resolver. So the idea is, via Akka Python, when you do DID resolution, if there is no native resolver in Akka Python, as a fallback, it's going to contact the universal resolver via HTTP, and it's going to try to do this DID resolution. This is the idea behind. Now, regarding the DITCOM plugin, the idea of this plugin is implementing both sides of the protocol. It's implementing the resolver side of the protocol and the receiver and the resolver. I don't know how to say it. So actually, what Danub Tech has done is, they are this resolver agent that you see, this this gray box, it's actually an Akka Python running with our plugin, but just talking one side of the protocol. And then on the other side, you have as well Akka Python, but implementing the other side of the protocol. So the idea is, like, Danube Tech is planning to add this DITCOM interface in the universal resolver using Akka Python and the plugin that I'm explaining now. Did I answer your question?
Yes. Here's the question. Maybe between you and Steven, is there a reason why this doesn't just get adopted straight in as a feature of Akka Pi? This seems like really universally, no pun intended, useful.
I don't know. Steven, go ahead.
So you're suggesting that rather than make it a plugin, make it a core element of Akka Pi?
Yeah, and perhaps, you know, it's via some argument. So if you have some reason to not enable this, you could. But it seems like this is a sort of would be a highly desired feature for folks running Akka Pi anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's my thought response, is that rather than maintaining it as a separate repository, having this be sort of a core feature might be just really insanely useful.
Yeah. And then basically just an argument to configure it.
Yeah.
And presumably the plugin already has those. So it's, okay, Victor, let's discuss that.
I'm not trying to like not have a repository contribution here, but I just I'm wondering if it's a separate repository, it's going to have, you know, there's a higher burden of maintenance. If it ends up being part of the regular Akka Pi repo, then I think it has a greater chance of regular maintenance over time.
Yeah.
I think maybe what we need to evaluate a little bit is all the configuration that is needed to configure this plugin, because if we integrate it as part of Akka Python, maybe we are going to add more configuration, but I'm fine with it as well.
There's a lot of configuration already.
I wonder if there isn't some way of having sort of a bundle of configuration that applies to the resolver, such that it doesn't necessarily have to be mixed in parallel with all of the existing Akka Pi configuration.
Well, one of the things Akka Pi has is that you can have multiple YAML files with them all separate. So
maybe out of practice, we just shove all of the did resolution stuff into one YAML file.
Yep.
I think there's Akka Pi has a plugin config file that allows you to specify a plugin, and then you can provide YAML configuration for the plugin. I think maybe that could be useful for that.
Yeah, cool. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Clement, you're up next, I think. Unless Steven, you had something.
Yes, let's go then. I'll give you a quick overview of what we do with the plugin. Okay. Sorry. Just have to enable screen sharing. So just to frame. Okay, I can share my screen without restarting, so let me rejoin this meeting real quick.
In case you're wondering, Clement has a Mac. We can always tell when someone has a Mac.
Ouch.
It's their first screen share on Zoom. Yeah, both has a Mac and does not usually use Zoom.
I think it's a limitation of the, like some apps do allow to not restart. So I think it's possible for apps to not require it.
It might be a Zoom thing. Yeah.
Okay, so quickly to frame the plugin, we wanted this to be able to scale Akka Python horizontally in our agency. And we have a message-based architecture around Kafka. Credits to Daniel and Adam, who did the actual implementation of the plugin. what's in the plugin is an implementation for an inbound queue, an outbound queue, and a way to emit events through Kafka. And we can enable or not enable the plugin independently for each of these parts. So this is what it looks like when using the plugin. Akapai sources its messages from Kafka, so it's in long queue instead of HTTP, and posts its DITCOM responses on Kafka. This means that you need some kind of interface to convert your DITCOM messages that are on HTTP to Kafka messages. You can either have a transparent proxy or, as we do, have a mediator, an Akapai, that's configured with an HTTP inbound and Kafka outbound. And then same for the actual delivery of DITCOM responses. You have to have something that's capable of picking up Kafka messages and posting on HTTP. Looks complicated like that, but the nice thing is that you can scale each of these three parts independently of the others. So this is for the DITCOM messages flow, and the separate feature is the events and webhooks of Akapai. We can configure Akapai to post webhooks on Kafka instead of HTTP, and we can configure the destination topic with parameters like the protocol and its state. So you can dispatch connection events to a topic and issuance events to another. The payload is not only the event, it's wrapped in an envelope with some metadata like the wallet ID, the protocol, the state, and topic and category. So you can further decompose your topics if you want to have a topic dedicated to a single wallet, for example, for segregation or whatever. Or if you need this data to consolidate with data from your agency, we use the wallet ID to cross the events data with customers' data, for example. So to wrap up, what's in the repo is the actual implementation of the plugin. So the inbound, outbound queue and events dispatching, but also a proof of concept for an HTTP relay to pick up DITCOM messages and post on Kafka, and an HTTP deliverer to pick up Kafka messages and post them to DITCOM recipients with some retry mechanisms. We also have a couple of Docker Compose to demonstrate how the whole thing together works, whether you're using a mediator or a relay. So you have the whole setup with a mediator or relay, Akapai, in multi-tenancy mode, and the deliverer on the other side. You can find all this here. I'll post the link in the chat for those who want to check it. So in demo, you have what I just said, the Docker Compose with the relay or the mediator. And Kafka Q is the actual implementation if you want to have a look at this. And that's it.
Can you talk about the effect of using Kafka as to offload inbound and outbound messages?
The effect.
I'm presuming there was a reason you did this, right? And it seems like offloading the inbound process or the sort of the receiving and the transmission of messages was what you were going for. So just curious, sort of what the overall effect is on the execution of the Akapai instance.
Yes, well, it makes it easier to scale up your Akapython since they will all pick up messages from the same pool of messages, with the caveat that you want to make sure that a single protocol execution is handled by the same consumer. So we use keyed partitions. So each message is keyed with recipient key. So you ensure that a single Akapai instance will process all messages from a single protocol execution, even more than that. But so this allows to share your incoming load among multiple Akapai pretty easily. And for dispatching, In my opinion, it's great to have it decoupled from OKAPI because then you can implement retry strategies as complex or easy as you want them without without putting all this code in OKAPython directly. And you can scale up or down your outbound deliverers independently of OKAPI.
So Stephen, you've done clustering of OKAPI, but I believe the difference here is that when you've done it before, a message may arrive at any of the OKAPI instances. And what they've done with this allows for the reception of the message to then be pinned to an OKAPI instance such that the state doesn't actually have to be shared between the OKAPI instances in order to sort of keep things straight within an execution. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, yes. And you ensure that you have no other messages. Go ahead, Victor. You have the nice slides.
Yes, Sam, I'm sharing the screen. It's exactly what you say. The way we see OKAPython, so first of all, we have use cases for high availability, meaning we want to scale OKAPython and have more than one OKAPython within our agency. And the idea is, OKAPython is stateless, meaning you have an incoming DITCOM message, then this triggers a protocol, then you load the state machine, then you execute the protocol, and then you persist again your state machine. So at the end of the day, the way we see it is, okay, OKAPython is a stateless protocol executor, and we have incoming messages and outbound messages. And this is why, we have a lot of expertise in Kafka. Also, there we have another microservices, as not only OKAPython. So for us, everything makes sense. But at the end of the day, it's like OKAPython is stateless; it can scale horizontally, and OKAPython is executing protocols and is, let's say, consuming messages and producing messages. And this is the idea under the hood.
But I think I'm worried there's a terminology mismatch here. I think an instance handles a protocol message, not a protocol.
A protocol message. This is right.
Right. Okay.
This is why the way we do the load balancing of the messages is based on the recipient key, because the operation of opening a wallet is a bit expensive.
Yeah.
So this is why we try when use. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, so you're trying to use the same instance as much as possible, and you make it possible, but it doesn't have to use the same instance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, here there is another improvement, which is the state machine. This in-memory state machine right now, it is not shared across multiple instances of OKAPython, but ideally the next step would be to have like a distributed memory like Redis or Memcache, where even multiple OKAPythons can share the same distributed memory.
Very cool. Okay,
that confused me again.
Oh.
I wasn't clear on that. So in that state memory, is that the entire protocol or just the message that you're processing at this time?
So the way I understand it is like OKAPython, it's stateless, meaning in between transactions is persisting the state machine. But this state machine is heat rotated is that the name, or it's loaded in memory?
So you're saying you can improve performance, you think, if you can make it that memory sharing lighter weight?
Exactly. So if you introduce a distributed memory cache as Redis, where this memory that right now it is isolated for each instance of OKAPython can be shared across multiple instances of OKAPython.
The other thing to add is BCGov has done a Redis implementation that more or less matches this. And so the OKAPI itself enables the use of queues, but doesn't have an opinion on which queue you use. And then these plugins, you can use Kafka or you can use Redis, or you can create another implementation if you want. So that's kind of how this works. And by default, if you don't use anyone, AcaPy continues to use in-memory queues for these things, with the risk there that that you can have an instance, an AcaPy instance fail, and you lose your in-memory queue. So that's why we want to go to these persistent queues. Cool. Thank you.
So I love this. The word proxy keeps showing up in my brain, right? Like it's common to run an HTTP server behind something like Nginx that does things for you. And this feels like a similar concept, obviously not identical. The only thing that I'm wondering about is the repo name itself, and that I don't get the proxy nature of what's going on via the name of the repo. I know it's an AcaPy plugin and it does something with Kafka, but it doesn't really convey that that's the case, and is my only real feedback on this. I think it's wonderful work, but I wonder if we come up with a way to describe it a little bit better, that it could work. Part of the reason why I'm bringing this up is that we've had folks that were interested in using Kafka before as a DIDCOM transport, which is not really what you're doing here. And so I think it may be, and maybe it's not a repo change, but like a clear description at the top of the README in the repository that helps make it clear that this is about using Kafka internally to an instance or to an agent instance, rather than trying to promote Kafka as a transport, generally speaking.
Sounds good. I mean, we are happy to suggestions, and I think also Stephen, we need to align on the naming for both repos so it's consistent.
That would also be helpful.
Yep. So I think a couple of these topics will shift over to the ACAPUG meeting on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. Hopefully, Victor and Clement, you can make it, because I'd like to take a couple of these. Ian's going to be leading it, and I'm actually back channeling with him right now to say we need to go through a couple of these discussions that are coming out of this.
Cool. It's already named with Aries AcaPy in the prefix, which makes it easy to associate with AcaPy,
yeah,
which is nice.
Yeah, we need that, but you're right. And Kafka needs to be in there. But after that, we have to figure out what we might have.
Well, and if this is a general concept that AcaPy has, then making sure that it's named and clearly communicated that this is about sort of internal agent processing rather than a transport, I think would be helpful. I don't want to confuse someone that thinks, oh, Kafka is a transport now, generally speaking, in the DIDCOM world. I mean, it kind of could be, but it's never really been promoted. And so yeah. I don't want to cause confusion there.
I'm thinking, I'll leave it. I won't.
Cool. Excellent. Okay. There were three repos there, and it sounds like two of them are the universal resolver and the resolver that uses the DIDCOM as a transport. So those were involved in the same conversation then. Cool. All right. Anything else from the SICPA team?
No, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
So point of process here. There's the discussion about the resolver piece being absorbed into AcaPy. We can revisit that here if we need to. It makes sense that the AcaPy plugin remains a separate repo, I think, from the architecture that we've described. Is anyone opposed to receiving that into the body of work inside of Aries? This is a you got to speak up if you don't like it type of process. All right, I think a sufficient Nathan has been passed. So whenever the either a rename or whatever happens, then that repo has been approved for transition. When it comes time to facilitate that transfer, there's the folks at Hyperledger usually take care of that. We let them know what moves, and then they have a process that they use to move the repository. That's cleaner if you move it. than sort of starting a new one so that all the history and all of the issues and everything else just transfer over as part of that. So excellent. Thank you for your work. This is great stuff. And next on the agenda, Timo, do you want to share, Timo, or shall I?
No, I can share. Let's see. Great. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Cool. Okay, so I've been working a bit on like how we could migrate to fully qualified bits. We've had some initial discussions before, and just for context, if people weren't at the previous meetings, is historically in high pledge arrays we used dits without full qualifications. So that could either be a sovereign dit that used no dit soft prefix, or a dit used a dit soft prefix, but you don't know which ledger it is registered on. And we also had dit pair dits, which historically were fully unqualified. So now that we have a formal specification of how pair dits should work, it would be nice if we could update our legacy dits to qualified dits. And I think this is mainly needed in preparation for supporting DITConv2, where messages will indicate which DIT you're sending from. We could, it would need to be a DIT, so we need to qualify it. But to be able to update it, we would need to have some process that both parties know, like, all right, we have this old DIT and DIT document, and how do we transform it into the state that we want it to be. I've written an initial draft of the RFC, and it still needs a lot of work, wording, and cleanup. But it basically describes how can we qualify an indie dit, which is quite simple. It's just you need to prefix the identifier with dit indie and then the network. So that's something you would have to know. The more complex part, and that's also what I would like to discuss here, is like how we could qualify pair dits. So first, my initial thought was like, it would be great if just the two agents could independently update their stored dit document to one that supports the latest dit standards. So public key is renamed to verification method and changes like that. And then generate the dit pair identifier from it, so both parties would know the new identifier of the relationship. But as I started like tinkering a bit with it in RSM with JavaScript, it turns out to be quite hard. First limitation is that you should choose a num algo. If you don't want to negotiate upfront, like how are we going to do it, you would need to enforce a num algo. If we choose dit pair two, it means the dit document will be static. I'm not sure if that's something we want to enforce. If we choose dit pair one, it's almost impossible to determine the old dit based on the dit, which in when we're using community coordinated updates, can be quite hard. If you want to dynamically update dits when they come in, it would be quite hard to correlate them. So it would require like an upfront migration, so you already have the new identifier and could link it to the old identifier. And another limitation I ran into is that the dit pair spec has no canonicalization or normalization scheme, which means that the way the JSON was sent to you is really important for the actual dit that will be generated. The dit pair one will create a hash. So if if you got it sent with the ID property being the first element in the JSON body, but somehow we have that in Erase Frame with JavaScript through serialization, deserialization, it ends up as the last parameter, the generated dits will be not equal. Dit pair two is less prone to this, but still the services are encoded, base64 encoded, I think, as is. So if the ID of the service or the type is switched around, even though the values, the documents are semantically the same, the DIT that is generated from it will be different. I mean, this has been a limitation or like something we had to, an issue we had to deal with in AFJ anyway, because JSON by default, you can't assume on order. So it would have been a lot easier if the DIT peer spec would have defined a normalization or a canonicalization scheme. But yeah, that isn't there. So my question was a bit like, what's the approach we should take here? We could define a protocol that you would share the transformed DIT document with the new DIT. So one party does it, the other party verifies it. But then we're basically creating the connection protocol itself. And I'm not sure what the, what we gain from it. We could maybe look at some in between ways using a decorator or something. I'm not sure. But I just would like some input if like I'm completely missing some approach that would work here.
So I was wondering in my mind, Timo, about the protocol form of this. Wondering, so obviously if we have an easy way that we can all sort of interpret the same thing, and accept either the old or the new form, it's easy. When it isn't, it might be worth actually having the parties just be responsible to tell the other folks. Now, the good news is it's a lot simpler than than the connections protocol, because you already have a secure way to communicate and you already know who each other are. So there might be more or less two messages. One is, hey, how would you like to upgrade unqualified DID X? And then a response, which could also be sent without the question, which would be, here's how I am going to make this happen, right? Here's the fully qualified form to compensate for the other one. It is a little bit more complex in the implementation, in the such that you've got to make sure that the other software is capable of receiving the message prior to you actually sending it. Otherwise, they'll just ignore it and it won't make any difference. But that is probably, in my mind, when there's variability in what's going on, that might be the clearest way to make that happen.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but then I was thinking like, will anybody actually implement it? And as this is only going to be an issue with DITConv2, and DITConv2 has a quite elegant way of doing rotation of DITs, I was thinking, what if we just don't write that protocol? And the first time you send a message using DITConv2, you will use the new DIT or a completely new DIT, new keys. And the from prior field will contain the previous DIT, and maybe it's something like DIT, if we want to prefix it, DIT legacy pair, and then we have the old identifier, and then you're done with native DITConv2 approaches, which I was thinking like, is this really worth the effort? Is anyone going to implement it?
You raise an excellent question, because I was thinking the same thing. If we had DITConv2 right now, this would be almost a non-issue because of exactly what you're describing. But the other part of me would feel so much better if we are able to get this cleaned up prior to really having broad use of DITConv2. So
yeah,
we are about out of time and I don't want to run over. There's a meeting immediately following us. So Timo, so number one, excellent work. And this issue is in the Aries RFC repo, and so we could talk about this. I'd encourage you to go and share your thoughts there so that we can figure this out. Timo's done a wonderful job sort of guiding the discussion, but we need input and feedback particularly from software implementers about doing this. Whatever we decide is gonna mostly fall on those doing the actual coding work in agents, right? And so please go and share your opinion there on issue 735 in the Aries RFC repo. And then Timo, let's bring this back up next week as well. This ongoing conversation, I feel like we get smarter every time we bring the topic up in our regular weekly meeting. So cool. Appreciate your work bringing this along and articulating our choices so well. Very cool. Thank you, Timo. And those of you that are here for the next meeting, just hang out and the rest of us will vanish. We hope you have a great day and a great week, and we'll see y'all later.
Thanks. Can the host stop recording before the next?